This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
You're listening to the Evening Edition with Lynn and Kelvin, and our next story is about an ongoing and very important discussion, sex education. So last month, it was announced that the Women, Family and Community Ministry are planning to engage the Education Ministry soon about how to create a sex education subject for schools and therefore to kind of really fully integrate it into the curriculum.
Deputy Minister Hannah Yeo said records and statistics show that 9% of the total number of students in removed classes nationwide are sexually active, which she rightfully described as a high number. She also described this as an issue that could possibly ruin a generation, since children are already online and finding things out for themselves. So it's important to send them the right message from the very start.
So speaking of children being online, which is, I think, very relevant simply because I don't think I'm alone in saying that for many, many people of my generation, our generation, I think a lot of the information about sex, about pregnancy, about STDs, about just anything at all would have come directly from the internet. And when you get it unfiltered, not always the best idea. So there is a new campaign from the States called Amaze Junior that's pushing for families to start the conversation from as early as 4. What they do is they create cartoon-based videos that are for both children and parents, helping them through difficult conversations with, you know, and in an age-appropriate way. One example that they used was actually this very common question.
My 4-year-old asked me one day, totally out of the blue, where do babies come from? I was shocked. Funny, but mine asked it 4 also. Only she was much more personal and sassy about it. Wanted to know exactly where she came from. I was like, I don't think so.
Okay, if I'm hearing you correctly, you both were thinking this was a question about sex. But if we consider the question from the child's point of view, we'll discover that where did I come from is really a question about a child's relationship with space and time in the world, and has nothing to do with sex.
I don't know. That sounds a little heavy for Tim. He mostly thinks about sounds that come out his butt.
Cute. But hear me out, Terry. Around 4 years old, children's brains make some important leaps in development, and they start to understand basic space-time concepts that used to be totally above their heads. For example, words like here, there, before, now, and phrases like after dinner and before you were born. This can spark some interesting new ideas, like, last night, Daddy told me I wasn't in that picture of him and Mommy in the dining room because it was taken before I was born. I think I know what he meant. I am here now in our family, so I'm thinking there must have been a time when I wasn't here. I think I'll go ask Dad where I was before I was here. So, where did I come from isn't about sex. It's about time, space, and location. That's why it starts with the word where.
So despite the fact that children might be asking questions related to sex and our initial reactions might be to shy away from conversations involving sex, age-appropriate sexual education doesn't have to take that tack. Sometimes it's the questions. Sometimes the questions aren't even really about sex at all.
So we want to hear from you. I mean, we're going to be talking with our guest, Victor Lam, who is a Teach for Malaysia alumni and someone who has been working in sex education activism for some time. But we would also like to hear, I mean, how did you first learn about, what form did your sexual education take? How did you first learn about sex? Was it from your parents? Was it from a safe source, I guess? Let us know. WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. You can also tweet us at BFM Radio. We're going to be talking about the forms that this could take in our schools. So for that, we're heading over to Victor Lam, who is a Teach for Malaysia alumni, as I mentioned. He's also carried out sex education initiatives when he was teaching in Sarawak. He's currently working on a pilot program for sex ed in schools in Kampung Tungku. Victor, thanks for joining us. So sex education, it does exist in some way or form in our existing curriculum. Can you talk us through the content of it, as well as when and how often it's taught?
Okay. I mean, I previously taught science. So I'm going to come from this angle. So as early as down and butt, students will learn about hereditary effects, similarities in families, sons and daughters bearing resemblance to their parents. So I think that's one of the very first times that you're introduced to the concept of, you know, reproduction in terms of hereditary. And then it continues on in Form 1, Chapter 4, Reproduction. So you learn about reproductive systems for both males and females. Students will get to learn about the different parts, for example, testicles, the penis, the vagina, the uterus, cervix, ovary, and then they also learn about puberty, i.e. changes in their bodies, and also the mechanics of birth, fertilization until the stages of pregnancy, fetal development, and also contraceptive methods for both men and women. So after Form 1, students do not revisit reproduction or sex education until general science in Form 4 and biology in Form 5. They will again study reproduction and growth, but again, the emphasis is on the mechanics of the reproductive system, the different types of hormones. So this content that so far exists in our textbooks is fair and good, but somehow, you know, like most subjects in school, you know, students view this as a very transactional experience. It's simply because, you know, the content is and the terms thought are somewhat technical, and based on the way students are assessed, it's gearing them towards a 100% based written exam. So it's very transactional and technical in nature.
How much training in sex ed do teachers receive, and do they see this part of the syllabus as important and necessary?
All right. So when teachers arrive at this particular sex education chapters or topics in schools, I would say that most teachers are really trained to be respectful of the students' feelings and sensitivity and knowing how to have a general two-way conversation. So in terms of being a professional sex educator, probably not. But in terms of delivering what's in the textbooks and respecting students, you know, views and sensitivity, then yeah, they probably have that training. However, you know, because the content in the textbooks is fixed, teachers need to keep abreast of the latest information, like, you know, especially in the light of what we see on social media nowadays, like Instagram, WhatsApp, WeChat, you know, flashy content exists on this type of groups. So teachers have to find ways to keep abreast of what kids are looking at. And I think the other question is, do teachers see the importance of sex ed? I think they most certainly do. I think no teacher ever wants to see the student get affected by an early pregnancy, you know, sexual abuse or bullying. So given that the textbooks are fixed, yeah, it really depends on the individual teacher or the counselor to go beyond, you know, what's being offered in the current syllabus. From my experience of speaking to other teachers, I would say that some teachers are more flexible, liberal in their approach. You know, some lean towards the more conservative side. But at the end of the day, it really boils down to how that teacher or school counselor can create a really safe environment. You know, given that Malaysia in general is still at a conservative angle in approaching sex education, and the emphasis on sexuality does not yet complement the current syllabus.
Right, so that's for teachers, but do you think that students are receptive to learning about sex in schools, or would they, as you mentioned, as we mentioned also, rather go to other sources like the internet?
Okay, I think students have a natural interest in their bodies as they change, and it's a big curiosity that they want to satisfy a lot, like, as in the sense that they really want to learn about themselves, why their bodies are changing, why they might feel certain feelings. It's just that in schools, students feel that they're being assessed on the exam. So therefore, they have a tendency to just follow what's written in the textbooks, and maybe to talk about more of their sexuality side of it is a bit harder because it's not generally being talked about in a manner that is widespread or open or safe. Not yet. I think we're getting there, but not yet. So in terms of the reception, it goes back to how the students relate to the content, right? So I think it really boils down to how the school teacher or the counselor can strip away, you know, the technicality and the mechanics and put it into simple, normalized terms that the students can relate to. And I think one example I can give you is to just revisit the Richard Huckle case. So I did a survey, a short survey in my class. You know, I asked them, like, okay, do you know who is Richard Huckle? And yeah, to my surprise, a lot of people raised their hands. And everybody knows he's a bad man. But and then my subsequent question to my class was, okay, why do you think he's a bad person? So they said, you know, he did something to kids. But when I probed further, yeah, they could not elaborate so well as to why, you know, sexually abusing or sexually targeting younger children was wrong. So they found it a bit difficult to put in the right words as to why it was a crime. So, yeah, if you were able to strip away some of the technical terms, I think it really helps students relate a lot better.
Was misinformation or lack of information about sex a problem in the schools that you worked with?
There are cases where the lack of information has prevented young mothers in my school to not get the necessary checkups they need. There was one student who was, I guess, because she was very thin, and you know, when she got pregnant, she thought that she was simply putting on weight, and she was, I guess, pregnant for about 3 to 4 months before she realized that, okay, I'm actually not really putting on weight, but I feel changes in my body. So she only went for her first checkup towards approaching her 5th month. She has probably missed out on a lot of nutrition, for the right nutrition for her baby, etc., just because she thought her pregnancy meant she was putting on weight. And case in point two, being a teacher in rural Sarawak, I work with my local clinic kesihatan, because every now and then we get calls from the nurses or from the medical officers asking us to come in to verify the identity of our school students. So there was a case where one of the school students was pregnant. And when I got to the clinic, I respectfully asked her, where is your partner or the father of your child? And with her was a slightly older gentleman who I assume was the dad. To my surprise, she pointed to the elderly gentleman as being the father of her child. The elderly partner was probably in his early 40s, and the girl was probably at, 15, 16, I think. So the point of the matter is, you know, was there consent? Okay, you know, does the girl know the meaning of consent? You know, does her partner or the father of the child know the meaning of consent? But my take on it is probably a misunderstood version of consent, where if the guy, you know, for example, took her out for a movie, bought her roses or stuffed toys, you know, he expect, you know, sex or physical contact in return. And both she and he probably thought that was the norm, when it clearly isn't. So, you know, and did they also know that sex with a minor was illegal? Yeah, probably not. So I think in this sort of cases, yeah, misinformation and lack of information play a huge role across societies.
We're speaking today with Victor Lam, who is a Teach for Malaysia alumni, as well as a sex education activist. And of course, we're talking about how sex education can be introduced into the school curriculum. We have more from Victor after this, so stay tuned to the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Building Fit Malaysians, BFM 89.9.
You're listening to the Evening Edition with Lynn and Kelvin. We're talking about sex education and what form it might take in our schools. Now, we still have Victor Lam with us on the line, who is a Teach for Malaysia alumni. He's currently working, in fact, on a pilot program for sex ed in schools in Kampung Tunku. And Victor, you've said a few times earlier that there needs to be more discussions, more open discussions around sexuality and sex ed. Talk to us a little bit more about this. How exactly would you like to see sex ed taught in schools?
Okay, so the ideal bit is to start it young, and to start it as young as when kids are in preschool or even in primary school. Countries like, for example, in the Netherlands, young kids there start off with sexual health, sexuality very early on in school. You know, for example, they learn things like, why does grandpa hold grandma's hand? Why do we give kisses on the cheeks to our parents? Why do people display affection? So I think, you know, this is the first start to sexuality education, where students are being taught to get in touch with their feelings. The second thing is also safe space. When I was a teacher, you know, bringing up sexuality issues was kind of like a double-edged sword. Some students will like it, some students will feel very, very shy. So I think the concept of safe space is hugely important. You know, how do we take it to the next level, in the sense that, you know, how can the teacher or the school counselor make the students feel like it's okay to have difference in their bodies? It's okay to have different feelings about people, opinions, and religious views, and still be able to talk about, you know, sexuality and sex education in general. The third thing is, like I said, the strong emphasis on sexuality, like, you know, with students at that age, it has to do with confidence in their body image, what they find attractive about themselves or not attractive about themselves. Teenagers are especially vulnerable at this point. given the influx of Snapchat, Instagram, where they are constantly bombarded with photos of good-looking people. In the sense that it's their favorite footballer, actress, or actor. You know, they're bombarded with products to make them look good, feel good. So I think a key part of this is, how do we teach our students to seek validation of their feelings in the right places, in the right way? The other related questions to this would be, you know, how can we leverage on this to talk to young boys on the subject of toxic masculinity, you know, locker room talk? How do we tell girls to create personal space when a boy expects a physical engagement as an exchange of a love or of a gift? When we empower young people to feel confident in themselves, in terms of their body, their sexual image, and their feelings, they are able to, you know, get a very strong sense of their personal barriers. You know, they're able to feel what is their personal threshold. You know, it takes a village to raise a child. So in the short term, schools are not able to, you know, fully teach comprehensive sex education by themselves. So my recommendation would be for schools to have tie-ups or collaborations with their local government hospitals or local clinic kesihatan to run a series of modules on sexual health. And if it helps with the taboo-ness of it, you know, get the buy-in of a religious organization as well. If clinic kesihatan or local government hospitals are already working schools on vaccinations, health checkups, you know, there's no reason as to why modules or classes on sexual health and education and sexuality can come in, right?
Right, and we can't talk about sex education without including parents in the conversation. What should they be mindful of?
Some parents have the luxury to talk to the students about their sexual education. Some parents do not, so they therefore do rely on the school a lot. I think the biggest thing that parents need to prepare themselves, especially in this age, is, you know, the realization of how much sexual content is generated on Instagram, Snapchat, WeChat, Telegram groups, you know, things like Tinder. You know, it's so easy for young people to seek out validation of their sexual feelings these days. You know, consistent likes on Instagram posts or different models, leaving objectifying comments that could come off as sexual harassment, meeting strangers online. You know, I think that's the one thing that parents need to pay attention to, especially if they're having kids who have easy access to smartphones at a very young age, leading on to puberty, you know, and their teens, you know. So, parents need to know how to be able to talk to the kids in the light of, you know, social media. And we always talk about upskilling our students, you know, in terms of their knowledge on sexual education, sexual health. We always talk about upskilling teachers. You know, even in corporations, we talk about upskilling, you know, our current staff so that they can perform better. But, you know, do we ever talk about upskilling our own parents in terms of the professional development in regard to, you know, talking to their kids about sexual health or sexuality? Then, yeah, probably not. So, yeah, I think these are the main focus areas.
Victor, thank you so much for speaking with us today. That was Victor Lam, a Teach for Malaysia alumni who's currently working on pilot programs for sex education in schools. What would you like to see in terms of a sex education course or class in our public schools? What form would you like that to take? And for that matter, who spoke to you about the birds and the bees? Let us know. WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. You can also tweet us at BFM Radio. Right now, we've got the Cardigans with Rise and Shine. Keep it here on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my. BFM 89.9, the business station.